I don't know how many of you have received your Zion's Advocate this week, but this is an excellent one from start to finish. I've read all the articles, and they touch a little on my subject for tonight, so I want to take a couple of verses that I found here and read them to you. The first one is in the very first article by Apostle Roland Surratt. The very first verse in the intro to his article says, "The absoluteness of God's will is hardly realized in the world we live in today. Yet God's hand is upon us at this very moment. We can be assured He will not be set aside as being a non-existing God by the leaders of nations without consequences. Even as we anticipate the reaction of God against the boldness of the heathen, we should realize that His greater concentration will first be on His church to bring correction as needed." All of these articles are excellent. The one by Adam Yates would be a good study article for a group that wants to get together and discuss the gospel. And it is from that article that I will read this. "So now there are some questions which come naturally. Why would God allow things to arise to change and pervert the gospel? Why? It isn't unprecedented for God to allow men to follow their own desires under the inevitable end. He allowed this in Noah's time until the decision was made to start anew. God spoke out against false prophets in Old Testament times, but allowed them to teach their falsehoods until Christ came and was reset of those incorrect things. The falling away came as prophesied by New Testament writers." It's a good advocate. My subject tonight is the workings of God. How God functions, how He works. And I thought I knew, but I got a little enlightenment from this article that I'm going to use tonight, and I hope you do too. But don't take it that I'm throwing rocks at you. I'm going to use 1 Samuel. And I'm going to start in chapter 8. This is the story of Samuel. And it starts out this way. "And it came to pass, when Samuel was old, that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre, and took bribes, and perverted judgment." Now Samuel judged Israel, if you look back in chapter 7, he judged Israel all of his life. The time that we're reading about is about 1000 B.C., and Samuel lived about 80 years. Well, because his sons didn't hang in there and do what they were supposed to do, verse 4 and 5 happened. And I'm going to read a lot of this, but if you've got a Bible, you can follow along with me. I'm also going to fragment it. I'm going to jump from place to place. So, then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah, and said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in the ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. Wow. They want a king. After having a prophet, a man of God, like Samuel, of course his sons go a different direction, they suddenly decide, let's have a king, and we'll be like all the rest of the nations. And the Lord said unto Samuel, Hearken unto, and this is verse 7, Hearken unto the Lord, the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. So they have rejected God, not necessarily Samuel. And God is telling Samuel, go ahead and give him a king. Well, this doesn't set well with Samuel. He sees the ill effects that can happen here. And you know, go down to verse 10, and Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him a king. And he said, This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. So he's warning them up front. You guys want a king, and if you get one, here's what you're going to get. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. He will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and will set them to ear his ground, and to reap his harvest, and to make his instruments of war, and instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be confectionaries, and to be cooks, and to be bakers. And he will take their fields, and their vineyards, and their olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. He will take the tenth of your seed and your vineyards, give to his officers and to his servants. He will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your sheep, and ye shall be his servants. And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you. In other words, you choose a king, that's what you're going to get. And if it happens, too bad. You chose him. Verse 19. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, Nay, but we will have a king over us. Now, a wise fellow looking at that would say, Boy, oh boy, did they figure that one wrong. They say they want a king, that we will also be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. What did the Lord say? The Lord said to Samuel, Hearken unto their voice, and make them a king. And Samuel said unto the men of Israel, Go ye every man unto his city. And this starts the saga. What do you think of that? Would you do that? Let me make a bold assertion. We in this country have already done that. More on that later. Now we switch the scene. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechemoth, the son of Alphea, a Benjaminite, a mighty man of power. Now, the tribe of Benjamin was the smallest tribe, and as it turns out, the family of Kish was one of the lesser known ones and a smaller family, but they had a son. And in verse 2, chapter 9, it says, "And he had a son whose name was Saul. And he chose young men and a goodly man, and there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he," meaning Saul. "From his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people." What do you really, that's another way of saying he had a good head on his shoulders. Well, it turns out there in verse 3 that Kish owns a bunch of asses. That's donkeys. And the donkeys were lost. And the asses of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. Now, Randy can tell you about donkeys. They don't stay in their pens all the time, do they? Now, they have a mind of their own, and they like to wander. And they're fun-living little creatures. And these fellows decided to take a walk, and they were gone. So what happens? In verse 3, "And the asses of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to Saul, his son, 'Take now one of the servants with thee, and arise, go seek the asses.'" Go find them. Okay, I want to ask a question of the adults here. Just the adults, not the children. How many of you know the story and where we're going? Really? Okay, kids, all the children, how many of you know the story of Saul going to look for the donkeys? How many of you know it? Wow. Okay. When I was a young man growing up, I was kind of an oddity, I guess. I didn't want to be Batman or Superman or anything like that. I never had me any costumes. But I wanted to be, I thought Samson was just great. And I thought Saul was great. And I thought David was great. And the stories here in the Bible are as good as any of those modern day stories that you'll read. Any of those westerns, you know. They've got a lot of action in here and a lot of things happen. And I recommend, read them. You'll enjoy them. You'll also learn about God and his gospel. Okay, Saul goes out after the donkeys. Well, he travels with his servant for 3 days. They don't find the donkeys. And they are a little perplexed. And they come to one of the cities where there's going to be a big celebration and a big feast. And at this feast, there's going to be a blessing. And the prophet Samuel is going to be there, and he's the one that's going to give the blessing. And so in verse 10 of chapter 9, then Saul, let's see. Verse 8, I'll say, "And the servant answered Saul again and said, 'Behold, I have here at hand the forepart of a shekel of silver. That will I give to the man of God to tell us our way.'" In other words, he'll pay him, and they'll learn where the donkeys are, and they can go get them, because the prophet should know. Okay, verse 10, then Saul said to his servant, well said, come, let us go. So they went into the city where the man of God was. And if we jump over to verse 15, this is God talking to Samuel. Now, the Lord had told Samuel in his ear a day before all this happened, that Saul was coming, saying, tomorrow about this time I will send thee a man out of the land of Benjamin, and thou shalt anoint him to be captain over my people Israel, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. For I have looked upon my people, because they cry is come unto me. And when Samuel saw Saul, verse 17, the Lord said unto him, behold, the man whom I spake to thee of, this same shall reign over my people. And wouldn't you know, Saul and Samuel meet in the gate of the city. Now, how about that for coincidence? That was no coincidence. That's the workings of God. He had Saul all picked out ahead of time. He knew his sons weren't going to toe the mark. And he's preparing a way to answer the will of the people. Yet, because the people insisted, we want a king, he said, okay, you're going to get one, but he's going to pick it. And so what's he do? He loses Kish's donkeys for him. So Saul has to go looking for him. Then he ends up in the city where they're going to have the celebration. And lo and behold, who's he run into but the man of God? Of course, they don't know why they're there. They're going to ask him, where's my donkeys? But Samuel knows better. Let's see what happens to that. Then Saul drew near to Samuel, this is verse 18, in the gate and said, tell me, I pray thee, where the seer's house is. And Samuel answered Saul and said, I am the seer. How about that? Go up before me into the high place, and he instructed him where to go so that they can have this celebration. And as for thine asses that were lost 3 days ago, set not thy mind on them, for they are found. Now, how about that? The whole thing was a kind of a charade to make it look like he was looking for the donkeys, but it really was God's method of getting Saul to the celebration so he could meet Samuel the prophet. Ah, but the plot thickens. At the celebration, chapter 10, verse 1, then Samuel took a vial of oil and poured it upon his head and kissed him and said, is it not because of the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? So he anoints him to be captain. Well, now, wait a minute. We thought he was planning a king here. Well, let's see how this works out. So Saul leaves the city, and on his way, they meet a bunch of prophets. And as these prophets are going from city to city, proclaiming their religion, Saul falls in with them, and dresses like a prophet. And the people notice him. Now they noticed him as he went through the countryside looking for the donkeys. You know, there goes that guy that's looking for those lost donkeys. Now he shows up as a prophet. And so all of a sudden, they're all talking about Saul. Who is this new prophet, you know, that's showed up? And we drop over to verse 9. And it was so that when he had turned back to go from Samuel, God gave him another heart. And all those signs came to pass that day. Now, when it says it gave him a heart, you'll notice your first thought is, well, did he make him evil? No, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say he gave him an evil heart. In other places, he did that. But he didn't give Saul an evil heart. He just gave him another heart. This all happened in 1000 B.C. Christ hadn't come. The gospel wasn't here. We didn't have faith, repentance, and baptism. It was a hard taskmaster law, the old law. You either did it or you didn't, and suffered the consequences. But when he changed his heart, what he did was give Saul his free will. He set it so that Saul could do what he wanted to, make his own decisions, but not necessarily evil. They could be good or bad. He had a choice. That was the change that he placed in his heart. And then if we go down to verse 24, now all the people knew who he was, even though he was from the lesser family of the lesser tribe of Israel. And in verse 24, and Samuel said to all the people, see you him whom the Lord hath chosen. Now they anointed him captain. Okay. He gave him a rank, but he didn't make him king yet. And there is none like him among all the people. And all the people shouted and said, God save the king. Aha. Do you see how God worked his sleight of hand, I'll call it, to get Saul into the right place, get him known, get him anointed, and then the people accepted him. They didn't fight the problem or say, no, we want somebody else. They said, okay, we'll take this guy. God save the king. And Saul would be king of Israel. The workings of God. God always has a plan. I refer to it as he always makes a way out. In everything that he does, to the future, he has a plan. He has a plan for us. He has a plan for the world and our nation at this time. We may not know what it is, but he has a plan. And it may not look like what it looks like, but we'll know it when it happens. But there's more to this story. God gave Saul a change of heart. I call it the free will. So Saul could do what he did. And you know what? Remember all those things I read that Samuel told the people, your king's going to do this and this and this. Once he gets the power, he's going to take your men. He's going to make the chariots. He's going to do all this stuff. He did it. Just like Samuel said, human nature being what it was, Saul used his free will, and he became the king that Samuel said he would. He made alliances with people he shouldn't have made alliances with. He fought battles with people that he shouldn't have fought battles with. And in one case, he took it upon himself to do a sacrifice. He called for a lamb and he performed a sacrifice. And when Samuel saw him, Samuel said, "Saul, what have you done now?" For that, God held him responsible. And all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. And there they sacrificed sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord. And there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. Oh boy, they got their king. They got what they wanted. Now they could be like other nations. In verse 13 of chapter 12, it says, "Now therefore, behold the king whom you have chosen and whom you have desired, and behold, the Lord hath set a king over you." Then in verse 19, "And all the people said unto Samuel, Pray for thy servants unto the Lord thy God, that we die not, for we have added unto all our sins this evil to ask us a king." Suddenly it dawns on them, their Israelite freedom under the old law, tough as it may seem, went right out the window, and they had a new adversary, their own king. How about that? It's in chapter 13 at verse 9 where Saul performs the sacrifice, and this displeases God. "And Saul said, Bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering." Even as king, he wasn't supposed to do that. The prophet was supposed to do that under the old law. In verse 13, it says, "And Samuel said to Saul, Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandments of the Lord thy God." And let me see, we'll go on here a little further. But God, as always, had a plan. If we move up to verse, chapter 15, verse 26. "And Samuel said unto Saul, I will not return with thee." They were going to leave this city and go to their homes after a happening. And I haven't read you the details, but that's really not all that important. "I will not return with thee, for thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord hath rejected thee from being king over Israel." In other words, the Lord says, "Well, I did it again." He gave him his free will, gave the people what they wanted, and what'd they do with it? And then we go over to verse 35. "And Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. Nevertheless, Samuel mourned for Saul. And the Lord repented that he had made Saul king over Israel." Then we move to chapter 16. And I told you kids that these stories have excitement in here, because I left out all the battles and the fighting and the wars and the things, and the action stuff that you might enjoy. But I look at it a little differently. Chapter 16 is where the cavalry comes, and you'll see what I mean by that. And the Lord said unto Samuel, "How long will I mourn for Saul?" Apparently, Samuel likes Saul with all his faults. "Seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel, fill thine horn with oil and go. I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons." Now Samuel is astounded. He says, "To Benjamin? And a king? Not again, you know." But he goes. And the Lord did that, and Samuel did that which the Lord spake, and came to Bethlehem, and the elders of the town trembled at his coming. I'll bet they did. And said, "Comest thou peacefully?" And he said, yes, he came peacefully. He's going to sacrifice at another one of their goings-on that they had. They had these sacrifice days, fast days. They had more holidays than we can count, almost. So he used that as a guise to go to this city, and he took with him a lamb, and he was going to perform this sacrifice. And he called on the house of Jesse, and he looked at Jesse, and the Lord said, "Nope, he's not the guy." "Oh, okay. Well, we have any other males?" And well, Jesse had 7 sons. "Oh, okay. So bring in the 7 sons." And so he looked at the first one, and the Lord said, "Nope, that's not the one." "Oh, okay." So he said, "Bring in number 2. So they brought in number 2. And he went through all the sons, and the Lord didn't pick any of them. And Samuel said at verse 11, chapter 16, "And Samuel said unto Jesse, Are here all thy children? Are these all the sons you got?" And he said, "There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep." And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither." In other words, we might as well get this over with, and then we can eat. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." I'll bet Samuel at that point thought, "Oh my." You know, he had to go through all these sons, and then he took the last one. Now, how many of you know this story? Let's see some hands. Ah, we got a few more hands this trip. Okay. If you want to read the details in here, it gets kind of excited, really. And it shows God's thinking ahead. He doesn't take it for granted. He's got an answer. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of the brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David for that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. So he anointed David, the last son of Jesse. Now, instead of losing donkeys and sending David out to find him to let the people learn who he was and get used to him. Instead, somebody discovered that he could play the harp, and he was pretty good at it, I guess. You guitar players will understand that. And so they directed, Saul needed someone to quiet his spirit. He was upset at all the goings on, realizing he wasn't king anymore. The people didn't know who the new king was. He hadn't been picked yet. Saul was probably as worried as the people were because he was going to lose his power. And so they said, well, we know this kid out here. He's pretty good on the harp. He can play for you and quiet you down and get rid of your anxiety. There's a lot of detail here, but that's what they did. And, of course, immediately everybody knew who this harp player was, and so David's name rose. People knew who he was and where he was from. Well, let's see. In verse 14 there in chapter 16, and the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. And that's when they called for Jesse, or for David. In verse 23, and it came to pass when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took a harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. And we go over to 14 and 15. And David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistines drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. So that they, during the reign of Samuel, they had conquered the Philistines and didn't have much trouble with them. But now that Saul was no longer king, the Philistines are back in the picture, and they have come to attack Israel. And how many know the next part of the story? Okay. The Philistines attack, and of course, as you know, they send out a champion. His name's Goliath. And nobody will face Goliath, but David comes up and says, I'll go. Well, Saul even offers him his armor, but it won't fit David. So David goes out there, and as you know, he defeats Goliath with a sling and a stone. Something pretty simple. Although he did later cut off his head and take the head back to Saul to prove that he, who it was and how he'd done this. I want to go to Genesis and try to wrap this up. Genesis 11. I'm having trouble with this Bible because it's not mine. It's Joyce's. And I was searching for what the Lord wanted me to say tonight, and he led me to pick up her Bible. And there was a marker in it. And I opened it and started reading the story, and the marker was the story of Saul, which I've just read to you. So Joyce helped me with this sermon too. In 11, chapter 11, and I'm going to go to verse 6. This is the story of the Tower of Babel. And God and his angels and so forth went down to see what the people were doing. And we know that when he got here on earth, he found out that they were building this temple, this tower. It was going to reach to heaven. And he was displeased. And he says in verse 6, "And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this thing begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do." And we have come full circle. I don't pretend to be a prophet or a seer, but our nation, for the first time in history, and our people, are in the same position that Saul's people were. They wanted a king. What do our people want today? They want to be like the other nations. They would join the Europe alliance. All one currency. You see our politicians on TV speaking about the world government. To my knowledge, there isn't one yet, but it's coming. And when it does, we'll have our Saul. This story is a good parallel because that's what the people desire. Let's go to the book of Romans. This is probably one of my favorites, the 12th chapter. And it's been used in a couple of sermons lately by others. I'm going to the 12th chapter of Romans. The ministry would have all guessed that. I'll read the first two verses. "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service." Are we doing that? You have to answer for yourself. I answer for me. "And be not conform to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." Our politics in this country have changed since the period of Herbert Hoover and those around the First World War who believed in isolism. They didn't believe that the United States should be involved in treaties and alliances and financial mixture with foreign nations because it would hurt the buildup in this country, and they were right. And for a number of years, through the political system in this country, we were probably the only capitalistic nation, the strongest nation in the world. By the end of World War II, we were number one. We are now number three, behind Russia and China. We have alliances with almost everybody, starting with NATO. Is it good or bad? Well, the idea was a good one. And a number of people in our country have actually attended meetings in Belgium. Jerry Case was one of them. He went as an aide, as a nurse, to a fellow who was a local politician here in Kansas City, but he was on the national committee. And he went to Belgium. This has been several years ago. And the meeting was about worldwide currency, everybody having the same currency. It's been planned for a long time. But we're about to get there if we become socialists. Be not conformed to this world. For the first time in history, things that used to be social moral factors like homosexuality, abortion, were just that. Now they aren't. They're political. They're argued politically. How many of you have watched some of the grilling of the lady to be the new Supreme Court judge, if that happens? You notice her answers and the questions they ask her? The next time our vice president speaks, listen to what she says. And now we have a new one. The gender difference. Did you know there isn't one? You can be anything you want to, a boy or a girl. We smile, but folks, it's real. We're where Saul was. We're where the people were 1,000 years before Christ. They want to be like the other nations. Do you want to be like the other nations? I don't. And anymore, it's going to be a fine line between political issues and the pulpit. That's going to make it harder on us. We need to examine our own lives. We need to look at groups, organizations, other people that we associate with, and do what it says in here. Avoid evil. Maybe he was a friend once, But if he does bad things, you don't associate with him. That's what the Bible tells you. I didn't write that. Back when I was pastor, I used to refer to the group that came on Sunday night as the hardcore. So I'm sort of speaking to the choir. But we can put out the word. We can talk to our other members. We can talk to our friends, our family. We can raise our children and be not conformed to the world. That's going to be hard to do because we're so far along. It snuck up on us. I thought I had one more reference here for you. Oh, yes. And this is one of the reasons this is a favorite of mine. It really starts with verse 3, but the author really gets into it at about verse 6, I think. Having gifts differing according to the grace that is given us. Whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith. It says, or the ministry of our ministering. We go on over into verses 10, 11, 12, down to 20. Verse 10 is probably the one that I'll close with, because though we are not supposed to associate with anything that looks like it could even be evil, verse 10 says, be kindly affectioned one to another. That's you and me. With brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. We have had members, I doubt that it's true of those here tonight, but that not only attend our church, but periodically go to another church, because after all, it sounds good, or whatever the social activity is. We can't afford to be that generous. We need to prefer one another. We need to unite. And above all, we need to bring up our children, knowing these stories, knowing the gospel rules, so they'll do right, not evil. Because the world out there is a big cesspool waiting to suck them in. Above all, watch yourselves, watch your politics. Do what you think is right, but think about it before you do it. And consult the Lord. He'll tell you what to do. And he won't steer you wrong. It's going to be a tough job. but I know who the winner will be. Jesus Christ. And I want to be on his side when that happens. God bless you all.